of the closing doors, please.
New York City, the East Village. A handful of artists, lovers, and dreamers scraping by on borrowed time and unpaid rent. In Chris Columbus's 2005 film adaptation of Rent, life is measured not in years, but in moments. In laughter shared, in music made, in love lost and found again. Based on Jonathan Larson's groundbreaking stage musical, Rent follows a group of friends confronting poverty, addiction, and the AIDS crisis at the end of the millennium. It's a story about survival, not just the physical kind, but the survival of creativity, community, and hope. These characters live on the edge of eviction, on the edge of heartbreak, and on the edge of history, unsure whether the world will remember them or move on without them. And perhaps that's what gives Rent its enduring ache. This uncertainty. The uncertainty of how long we have and who will become, and what traces we'll leave behind. The 2005 film arrived almost a decade after the stage show changed Broadway forever, and with it came a new question. Could lightning strike twice? Could a story born of immediacy survive translation to the screen? In today's episode, we'll explore Rent's transition from stage to cinema. How its energy, intimacy, and rawness were shaped for a new medium. And we'll look at what was lost, what was gained, and how its themes of time, love, and uncertainty still resonate 2 decades later. No day but today. This is Rent, 20 years on. I'm Andy Williams. This is Movieversaries. Welcome to Movieversaries on the Film Stories Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andy Williams. This is where we celebrate and sometimes re-evaluate some of the greatest movies ever on a significant anniversary. On this episode, we're turning up the volume and heading to New York City for a story about friendship, art, love, and survival in the shadow of the AIDS crisis. It's Rent, the 2005 adaptation of Jonathan Larson's groundbreaking Broadway musical. Released 20 years ago, and still raising a glass to artists, dreamers, and the life bohemian. To help me discuss the film, she's our Maureen meets Joanne hybrid. She runs her own theatre, fighting for the arts, and keeping the East Village spirit alive. From New York City, it's Violet Hammond.
Oh my God. Wow. What an introduction. Wow, to be a mix of Maureen and Joanne, what a compliment. I am tickled pink. Love it. Thank you so much.
Well, I mean, fact is facts. You've both got the business brain of Joanne, yes, and the more bohemian nature and artistic nature of Maureen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do love some attention now and then. That is true.
No comment. Rent. Mm-hmm. Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Let's just jump straight into the stage show. So obviously, for context, Rent was released in 1996 in the New York Theatre Workshop. The day after the off-Broadway dress rehearsal, the creator and writer Jonathan Larson unfortunately passed away. So he never got to live to see the success of the show.
Yes.
The film was then made and released in 2005 by Chris Columbus. For context, he directed Home Alone 1 and 2. He recently directed the Thursday Murder Club. And he did the first two Harry Potter films. I believe you call the first one The Sorcerer's Stone. We call it The Philosopher's Stone.
Yes.
And The Chamber of Secrets, as well as Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes. Yes. I mean, a pretty good track record.
What? Well,
money wise,
yes. I've left out Percy Jackson and the Olympians.
Oh, that is Pixels. A travesty. That movie is a travesty.
Yes. But Violet, I want to know, what does Rent mean to you?
I mean, it's funny because I have my notebook open and it's like, what does this mean to me? And I'm like, I couldn't even possibly write it down what Rent means to me. Like, it is, I'm already like emotional. Rent is probably one of my favorite musicals of all time. And it hit me at the absolute best time in the formation of what I was about to make my life's work, musical theater. Mm-hmm. I was in college when this show came out. And it was a show that celebrated being young, leaving your family for the first time. Here it is. That found family.
Found family.
That found family that you make in the new place that you have moved to in order to pursue your dreams with your mortality hanging over you.
Hmm.
How do you measure your life? To be asked that question in your early 20s, when your whole life is ahead of you, by a group of people who are facing their mortality in the mirror every single day, is a very profound thing, especially yes. for someone who is striving to be an artist, being asked that question by a group of people who are artists with words written by an artist who died before he could see his life's work fulfilled. So it is a kind of serendipitous in a weird way thing to have this show because of the themes of it and how it hit us in a way to have that just absolutely right in your face of, this is a story about, will I live to see my life's work accomplished, written by someone who didn't?
Mm-hmm.
So that is just unquantifiable in terms of emotion, really. So that's what really will always hit us with this show and yes. why it has endured.
I completely agree. It was a lightning rod for culture at the time. When you think of the rock-infused music taking on the sort of raw and youthful 1990s bohemian energy, it was adapted from the opera La Boheme by Puccini. So it did have a theatrical basis to it as a starting point, but it is so Jonathan Larson. It is so 1990s New York. And the representation of the LGBTQ plus community, the characters, the artists, and people living with HIV and AIDS in the 90s. And there's a real sense of emergency and community feel and being alive. You have to celebrate being alive. Like, that's the ultimate message of the show, to cut straight to the heart of it. And then the film happened.
Yeah.
So with a lot of the principal cast members returning for the reprising their roles, you've got Anthony Rapp as Mark Cohen, Adam Pascal as Roger Davis, Rosario Dawson as Mimi Marquez. She was cast just for the film.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse L. Martin as not the drink Tom Collins. You've got Wilson Germaine Heredia as Angel and Idina Menzel as Maureen.
Mm-hmm.
Tracy Toms as Joanne and Taye Diggs as Benny.
Yes.
So yeah. Where do you want to start with the film?
Well, I will say, first of all, I will get it out of the way. I saw the original cast on Broadway.
Wow.
Yes. In
oh my gosh.
January of 97. So
you were a very early adopter then.
Oh, yeah, but also I was a theater kid. Like,
you were there. Yeah, yeah. You this were was, there in the place at the time.
Yeah, exactly. I was a theater kid. This was like, this was it. This was like the way
the Hamilton
that
of its all the, day.
It 100%. The way that you have to like think about it is that, yeah, then Hamilton, when Hamilton was out, that was what everyone was obsessed with. Everyone was obsessed with Hadestown when that came out. Like, it's just like, there is always like, Spring Awakening was one of those shows. There is always like the, this is the show that every theater kid is obsessed with right now. And Rent was 100% that show. I remember being
stuff, weren't there? There was the lottery and the queues and
yeah, and that kind of, I mean, we can get into like how this show changed a lot of things, but I mean, not so much for film, but for Broadway, for sure. That was one of the first shows that really instituted a lottery so that people who couldn't afford the hundreds of dollars for tickets would still have the chance to see the show. I saw the show more times than I could possibly tell you. I have no idea how many times I saw the show because as the years went on, it ran almost 20 years. So as the years went on, it was like, we're bored. You just want to go down and see who's in Rent now? And we would, you know, you just go, you spend $20 and you go see Rent. I saw Rent 1,000 times probably. Oh the, yeah, that was one of the really cool things about it and definitely made theater more accessible for younger people, for people who didn't have a lot of money. I remember being incredibly jealous of George Clooney because he saw it like 4 times the month it opened. And I was like, how is he getting there's in there so much?
So many reasons to be jealous of George Clooney.
Yeah.
And you picked that one.
In the fall of 96 or the spring of 96, whenever that was, it was, that's why. I was pretty annoyed about that. But so, yeah.
What does the film mean to you then?
Well, I had said to you, I was like, this is going to be a retread.
The pause says it all.
This is going to be a retread of In the Heights. I will
which we
say,
did on Frame to Frame.
Yes, which we did on Frame to Frame. I will say I enjoy Rent more as a movie than I enjoy In the Heights as a movie. I think it's a more successful stage-to-screen adaptation. With that said, I have a lot of issues with it. Now,
okay,
it seems, and I'll just get it out of the way, like right away, because this is what I was building up to by saying I saw the original cast. I love that the original cast is in this movie, but I think this movie would be more successful if younger people were in this movie. I think that it's difficult to divorce your feelings of this is supposed to, it is supposed to be like late teens, early 20s people, and they are not, like, they are definitely not. And it makes someone who's seeing this for the first time say, why are these people who look like they're almost 40 still, like, you know, living like this? So that takes you out of it somewhat. When they were on stage, it looked a lot more realistic. So that is a shortcoming for me. It makes it difficult for me. However, like, am I really going to sit here and say I'm not happy that I have Jesse L. Martin, like, in a nice, in, like, the big screen version of this? Of course not. He's amazing. Idina Menzel is amazing. Like, I love seeing them in this. However, it would have been so much better if they had recorded it on stage in 96. That was
that would be the ideal.
That's what I would have loved to have seen.
Well, my journey with Rent is very, very, very different to yours. Shockingly, I know. I first sort of became aware of it for my former housemate in university, fellow Swifty to you. Shout out to Shelley. And she championed Rent massively. I had never seen it. And she showed me the film, first off. And I said, why are all these old people living like this?
Thank you.
And I didn't connect with it. I didn't really land with me at all. And then I saw it on stage. And I saw a touring company.
Yeah.
And it landed. So I think, now knowing the music and returning to the film, it's not something I've returned to since that first viewing. And I have some issues.
Mm-hmm.
I have some problems.
So
I want to dive in with you sort of the mismatch of media and the fact that you've got youthful themes and an older cast. But first off, I just want to say, what's up with the color? Like, the hue on the screen is so, like, autumnal colouring.
It's yellow.
Yeah, it's so overdone.
Yes.
So overdone. I think that kind of cuts to my criticism of the film is that it's so literal.
Yes.
It's not, the staging of the musical is abstract.
It is very, yes.
You kind of believe in the spaces because of the words and the way that the cast have designed that and the way that the creators of the show have designed that.
Mm-hmm.
When you see streets and apartments and cafes, then it just, it's subtraction by addition. It just doesn't land for me.
I couldn't agree more. It's a show that's built to be done with like two tables and a bunch of props. That's it.
And a band. The guys on stage playing.
And the guys on stage playing the music. Yes. And everything you need to know, they tell you. And when that gets dragged out and like flashbacks are added and all this stuff, it takes away from the beauty, from the simplicity of what you see on stage. And that really does detract from the story. Like, there's things to like in it, especially if you have connected with the stage version. But it is, it is just difficult to look at and get that same feeling that you get when you're watching it as part of an audience and you see the people on stage.
Well, I think Christopher Columbus is a very earnest filmmaker. Even though like he's done things like Home Alone and Mrs. Doubtfire, but you also look at things like Stepmom, Bicentennial Man. Like I think he's a straight shooter, and when he means comedy, he means comedy, but when he means the messages of those sort of more emotive films, he really hams home those messages. And I think that he delivers the messages in Rent very, very earnestly, but with absolutely no grit at all.
No.
The Bohemian edge has been sanded off.
Yes, it's so sanitized. And another criticism that I saw when I was doing my research is how you definitely lose the feeling of community that the ensemble brings in. Because it is a show that needs that feeling of it's not just our main characters. It's also everyone else who's on that block, all of the homeless people, all of the people at the life support meeting. So he brings them out in such tiny little increments that you miss that feeling of these are our main people, but they are a part of this community.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think that's where the difference between a film and a stage show is never more evident. The fact that the camera is used isolationist as opposed to inclusive. The stage show is many points a ritual of mourning, at many points a celebration. And the key part of the whole thing is community. And I think that the camera doesn't quite merge that collective energy that you get from stage.
Exactly.
Let's talk performances.
Because,
you know, we do have the central issue, I think, of all of the main principals being nearly 10 years older than when they first debuted the show. So their performances in the film, I would assume, mirror their performances on stage.
Yes.
It's just the way in which they're captured. So for me, I'm quite happy listening to the cast album of the movie or of the show.
Yeah.
Where does that land with you?
Like I said, I'm happy to have it on screen, but my memories of seeing them do it on stage are much happier memories. I'll say that. There are certain numbers that I think do well. I think I will say, if we're going to talk performances, I think Idina Menzel actually comes out the best in this, because Maureen's numbers are by design much more showy. So the way that Chris Columbus was able to put her numbers in, particularly Tango Maureen, particularly the number that I think survives the best from stage to screen, Take Me or Leave Me. Like, I think those scenes are worthwhile and good and probably the strongest in the show. I think that the boys come out a little, like, Mark and Roger suffer in this movie. I think their scenes from stage to screen don't work as well as everyone else. I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel like because a lot of times they are in isolation, and the isolation that they are in on film is not as powerful as what you see on stage.
You don't get the same sense of connection between them in the film. And I think Adam Pascal actually kind of oversings. He sounds like he's auditioning to play Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar, which, by the way, I found out he actually is.
Yeah.
But he's got that very sort of, it's clearly a rocky kind of voice that is inspired by musical theatre. But it's just like, one chance, glory! Like, it's...
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I totally know what you mean.
It's a bit much.
It is much. And I mean, he wasn't a trained actor. He was a singer in a rock band that they put in this show when it was in an off-Broadway workshop. Like, everything he learned about acting, he learned from being a part of this show. So it worked incredibly well at that time. But I don't know if it really worked in a movie.
Well, it worked in School of Rock. He played the lead singer of the band that kicks Jack Black's character out. The one who quite famously wears just sleeves of a top and hits on the principal later on. But yeah, he's kind of the one downfall I've got with the cast. The addition of Rosario Dawson as Mimi, because originally on stage she was played by
Daphne Rubin Vega.
I knew you'd know that off the top
of your
head. Of
course I would know that. Yeah. See, she was the one I didn't see because she was off. She had already left the show because she was off filming Wild Things. Remember that?
No.
Oh, remember when everyone who was in Rent became huge stars, even though they were literally no one before?
Yes,
she was the first one to, yeah, she was the first one to leave to get a big movie. She was in that movie with Denise Richards and Kevin Bacon. And so
everyone's got a 6th degree of Kevin Bacon as a
pretty
result.
Much. Yeah, here we go.
When I looked at her, I knew her from In the Heights.
Yes.
But so with Daphne Rubin Vega not cast in the film, what do you make of Rosario Dawson's casting as Mimi?
I actually love her in this movie. I think she's wonderful in this movie.
I mean, I just love her anyway. She just seems like an awesome hang.
100%. I think that I was really cool with that to start with because Daphne Rubin Vega works for me in a lot of other things. She never worked for me in Rent. She is my least favorite original cast member. Yeah. I'm not a fan of the way she sings the songs. But I love Rosario Dawson in the movie. I think she was a great choice. She, in particular, really nails the relationship between Mimi and Angel.
Yes.
You can see every time they look at each other, you can see the depth and the years of friendship that they have behind them before we meet these two characters. And that, I feel like, is really important to the story. It's one of those subtle things that I can always tell if I see this on stage and I can see that connection between the two of them. I know a director really did their job. So a stage director, I mean. Yeah.
Yes, so that's the sign that you're looking for.
Yeah. Like, you need, because that's, you know, again, it is a story of found family. So you see in Act One, which if you haven't seen the stage show and you've only seen the movie, Act One ends with La Vie Boheme. So you are seeing those, you're seeing the threads of this group come together in Act One, so that in Act Two, which opens with Seasons of Love, even though the movie opens with it, which I think is a horrible mistake, but that's...
Yes.
Yes.
Hey, everyone, here's that song that you know. No, yeah. save it.
It would be like starting Wicked with Defying Gravity.
Yes.
It's like, why would you do that? But, you know, so
they talked about it for part two, but...
Well, we'll find out soon, my friend.
Luckily, John Cho has already said they tested it and it was out.
Good.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, the performances, you can tell that all except two of our main characters did this show for at least a year together on stage before they all left to do other projects and then came back to do the movie. So you have that built in, we did this together 8 times a week energy. But Rosario Dawson and Tracy Toms fill in so beautifully. And I will say, Tracy Toms is my favorite Joanne, too. When the show closed on Broadway, she was playing Joanne on Broadway. And she's in the film.
When you said two, I was very confused because I thought everyone other than Rosario Dawson had been in it on stage.
No, she hadn't been on stage. But she did eventually play the part on stage. When the show closed, she was playing Joanne. So she is in that filmed version of the final performance in New York. And Renee Elise Goldsberry is Mimi. Which,
great Hamilton actor. That is.
There you go. Which, if you've never seen that one, you need to, because the filmed version is fantastic.
I never have, but I feel like I will now. So, the question is that we normally ask is that, does it still hold up and is it still relevant? So I think we're in a level of agreement that the film has its flaws. But with the show, with the nugget of what we have, like we are ostensibly a movie podcast. We are here to talk the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think the movie for me looks very dated. I think it probably looked dated in 2005. It feels like an oversaturated, sanitized version of something that really spoke to a generation of people. And I think Rent still holds up, though. I think those songs still hold up. Where do you stand on that?
No, I would completely agree. I think that the movie did itself a disservice by putting it squarely in 1989. This is December 24th, 1989. That's something the stage show never does. And it dates the movie in a way that really does not do it any kind of favors. The stage show never says a year. You just are in this environment. And I will tell you, as someone who saw this at the time, HIV and AIDS was very much still a dark shadow over the theater community, over the world in general. I had lost someone very dear to me the year before Rent came out. So this was not something that was foreign to me or something that wasn't important to my life. This was something that reflected my life and the life of people I cared about.
And it was still ongoing.
Yes.
At that point, it was still relevant. Even if you were to cast it as 1989, it still would have been relevant in 1996.
Of course.
But I'm not sure. Not sure that the film does that justice. But with it being so personally resonant to you, how do you go about recommending it?
Well, I would say that it is still so easy to look at this movie. We are a movie podcast. So the movie itself, I think if you haven't seen the stage show or you're not a musical fan, there's still a lot to get out of it, and you actually might enjoy it more because the music is it's a rock musical. So it's not like you have to sit here and listen to like Rodgers and Hammerstein if you're not like a theatery person. It's music that you would get.
Nothing wrong with Rodgers and Hammerstein.
I get that too. However, some people don't like that.
Well, fuck those people.
I think that.
Idiot!
That one always gets me, the beginning of it. I'm like, what is this? What is happening? I think that you can see that. And just like in La Boheme, what Rent is based on, the issue then was tuberculosis. the issue in Rent is AIDS. We can look at this and we can talk about how we felt during COVID. Like, there's so many things that we as a species can be facing that we then need to be able to look to each other to make our connections and to realize that we have today, at least we have today. Let's make the most of it. And that can translate through so many different eras and illnesses and problems.
Well, with your being closely tied to the show and the film by proxy, do you think that there's anything in the fact that you were of the right age and of the right time when the show came out and the headspace in which you were in with your personal tragedy as well, to then revisit that a decade later when you were in a very different stage of your life? Do you think that that may be part of the film's shortcomings?
Probably. I think that for the people who were there at this moment, when this show was the biggest thing in the world, if you lived in New York, would not be able to look at this movie and say, yeah, that captured exactly what it felt like. Like, it was always going to be a disappointment, I think.
In a way that things like, I'm going to throw Wicked Part 1 out there. I know we both had some reservations, but even still, I think Wicked managed to hold itself up in a way that, and Wicked very clearly for me captured the essence of the show, whereas I don't think Rent does.
No, I'd agree with that. I mean, you and I disagree on Rent as a show. I'm not Rent. we disagree on Wicked as a show.
I was like, do we? We love Rent.
Do we? We love Rent. No. Sorry. No, we disagree on Wicked as a show, but we agree that it's a very successful film adaptation. So, yes. And then on this one, we agree on Rent as a show, and we agree that it was maybe not the best.
Life is always better when we agree.
It is, though.
even if it is kind of undercutting the very serious message of the film.
We're just going to take a short break. You might hear some commercials, you might not, it depends on your algorithm, but we will be back really soon. And we're back.
So let's have a look then at another adaptation of Jonathan Larson, because I think what Tick, Tick, Boom managed to do in a way that Rent didn't was, whereas Rent is about the community, Tick, Tick, Boom is very much about the individual artist. It's about Jonathan Larson himself. Mm-hmm. But what it showed was that Lin-Manuel Miranda, who directed Tick, Tick, Boom, very much understood cinematic language and how it differs from theatrical language.
Yes.
I think that it captures more of Rent's spirit, the stage version, than this film version ever could have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, also, Tick, Tick, Boom is using the music of a stage show and you changing it to talk about Jonathan Larson. Like, the stage show of Tick, Tick, Boom is not Jonathan Larson's life.
Yes.
And the movie is so much better than the stage show of Tick, Tick, Boom. But that is what you get when you're looking at the earlier work of someone. You get better with everything that you do. So the music is great, but he always had like a slight... There's things in Rent that I still nitpick, that I think that his next show, if he had lived to write a next show, would have been even better than Rent. So that is, you know, that's the stuff that we lost. That's what we missed, because we don't have him anymore. So Tick, Tick, Boom, I think, was an unbelievable success in terms of not only introducing this man to everyone if they weren't aware of who he was, but introducing a whole new group of people to Rent.
Yes. And I think that's the success of Tick, Tick, Boom, is that it reimagines the original source and finds the soul in doing so. Whereas I think Rent, for all of Chris Columbus's earnestness, I think he wanted to create a faithful adaptation in the sense that a lot of the book is directly adapted. I think he actually clung too close to some of the form within the original stage show.
Mm.
He didn't try to translate the stage show onto film. He tried to translate theatre into realism,
mm-hmm.
which didn't work. It kind of flattened all of its theatricalities for me.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally, totally agree. I will say it looks like someone made this movie after loving the stage show.
Yes.
I think that he truly loved the show, but he did not know how to get that feeling into a camera. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. I mean, going through, like we did earlier, some of his other films, man clearly knows what it takes to make a good movie. He's made enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
He made some stinkers, he made Pixels, but he's also, you know, made some great movies.
Yeah.
And I think that it's possible that this is the passion project for Chris Columbus that shouldn't really have been. It should have been somebody else's,
mm-hmm.
because you can see that there is the possibility of a great adaptation of Rent, but this isn't it.
No, this isn't it. I mean, I think that the way it is presented on stage, it just works so perfectly. The mix between the stage blocking and the book and the music of the show, that it would be really difficult, I think, to try to make it cinematic.
Have you staged Rent?
Twice.
And how did that, how were you with that? How did that play?
Rent is always, always a big moneymaker. People love Rent. Like, everyone,
I mean,
my
and it's
age
probably
and
quite cheap to put on.
It's great. I mean, the thing that you really need to worry about is, you need to worry about not overcomplicating it in somewhat, because it is very simple. You need to make sure people see the iconic things that they are accustomed to seeing, like Angel's got to be dressed up in a Santa dress and things like that. Like, you have mm-hmm. to make sure you do those things. Those are the things that people expect to see and want to see. You need to make sure that you have real honest and compelling performers. It's not an easy show to cast. But it is a show that if you do it right, you will cry every night. It speaks to your soul. It really does.
Yes, I agree. And the fact that I didn't when watching the movie says a lot. How much of the film's shortcomings do you think are because Rent is all about living for the present, living for today, and when it's happening in front of you on stage, it is live.
Yeah.
On a film, by nature, it isn't. It's never that. It kind of, films capture moments. It's direct competition to what live theatre is. Do you think that that's kind of part of its shortcomings?
Yeah, I think that that is part of it. I did cry at the end in the movie.
I mean, that's fine. You're so but close I'm, to the source material.
I know. It's just, you know, it's just so hard to get to the end and to hear the lyrics of No Day But Today and not have it hit you. And it might just be more of my, you know, I'm just bringing that to it rather than if somebody was watching this for the first time and if this was their first experience with this song, would it hit them like that? Or is it just my years of this material and how close I am to it that just makes that, like, that emotional reaction happen? It's like a reflex, you know?
Yes. In which case, that brings me to your favorite moment or favorite song from the film? And yes,
yeah,
I'm going to stipulate film because
from the film, yes,
you know, there's some great songs that don't quite make the translation,
and songs that were cut. One of my favorite songs isn't in the movie, so it's very difficult. Christmas Bells isn't in the movie, and that is that's an amazing, like, it all comes together moment in Act One, right before La Vie Boheme. So right before the end of Act One. So not having that, and you know, and I get it. Like, there's if we're gonna hit shortcomings again, there's one in particular I really want to discuss, but. As far as what I think they did best in the movie, I've already mentioned Take Me or Leave Me. I think that is actually the one song that I think is filmed really well. For something that is staged in a really static way, it is it's made interesting to you to watch as something in a movie. So for that, I think that's done the best. I also am a real big fan of Santa Fe in the movie, but that is a lot of that is Jesse L. Martin and his amazingness. And I also really like them swinging around the subway poles, but
I mean, Jesse L. Martin for me is always going to be Joe from
Joe Flash. West.
So, because that's how I know him best, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember watching Flash going, oh, that's the guy from Rent. Whereas now I watch Rent going, oh, that's the guy from Flash.
Yes.
And like I was reading in prep for this that he has like 70% shot a movie where he plays Marvin Gaye. And I could not imagine better casting.
I know.
That would be perfect.
I know.
He's got the voice for it. He would be amazing.
Yeah.
Very few people could carry that, and I think he could. But I do like the staging of Take Me or Leave Me. It's one of the songs that I think improves with the film. Mm-hmm. La Vie Boheme is... it's some like that as a song. It's my favorite song from the show.
Yeah.
But that loses a lot being put into a cafe kind of... Like it was very on the nose.
God, yeah.
But I can't help but enjoy it when it's on because it's such a great song.
It's a bop. Yeah, like, it's so good. I feel like Anthony Rapp was bored throughout the course of making this movie. I don't know if he was just... I mean, I don't want to put any emotions on him or words in his mouth or anything, but his performance was... quite a bit flatter than it was when I saw him do this on stage 10 years earlier. I will say that. So, like, I saw him do it at a time when this was like the greatest thing that these people were doing in their lives. And they were not famous. Nobody, like, he arguably was probably like the one who had the bigger career. He was in Dazed and Confused. He was, you know, like, he had actually done some stuff before Rent. But most of these people had done absolutely nothing. This was the greatest thing they were doing in their lives. And believe me, when they were singing La Vie Boheme, you could see it all over their faces that this was the greatest thing they were doing in their life.
Well, he was in Chris Columbus's directorial debut as well. He was in Adventures in Babysitting.
Yes, so, he was.
You know, there is that. Do you think then the performances on stage were literally because they were singing for their livelihoods, they were playing for their livelihoods, whereas when you get to the film, some of them aren't?
No, I don't think, I mean, they didn't have to. Because they were returning to the thing that made them stars. There's no way you can recreate that feeling.
Well, we brought up Wicked earlier. So let's get to, as John Travolta calls her, Adele Dazeem, but as the rest of the world calls her, Idina Menzel.
Our good friend, Adele Dazeem. Yes.
So with Wicked sort of debuting, Wicked was already on. It was a thing by the time that the Rent movie was coming out. So she'd already been Elphaba because Wicked came out in 2003.
Correct.
So she was kind of in the throes of her second iconic role on her way to the third one, which is obviously Elsa.
Elsa and Frozen. Yep.
Frozen. So you said that you really love her performance in this. And obviously she ended up marrying Taye Diggs.
Yes. I can't remember if they were still married when the movie came out.
Yeah.
They were? Okay, good. Yeah. They got divorced after. Yeah.
Yeah, about 10 years after.
Okay. All right, yeah.
So, yeah, they were married at the time. And Taye Diggs playing the main antagonist, Benny. She just looks like she's loving what she's doing.
For all of the bored energy from Anthony Rapp, Idina Menzel is like living her best life. She really, truly is in this movie. She gives it her all, for sure.
And a backside. So. Mm-hmm. But you've sort of hit on earlier the choice to put Seasons of Love up top. You've
so
made a face.
Stupid. Yes, I did. So dumb.
Is that started literally because do you think that the reason it rankles you is because that's A, not how the stage show starts, and B, that's not where it belongs? Like, it doesn't make sense there.
No, because these people haven't met yet. You're about to watch all of these people meet. I also hate that it stretches out from one night to a couple of nights before you get to Love You, Boem. That makes me crazy. I remember seeing this. I remember going to see this when it opened and having it be like, you know, nighttime and then it's morning, because when Roger goes to life support, it's the next morning, and just getting so irrationally angry about it in the movie theater. I'm like, this all happens in one night. What are they doing? Like, just what's the point? It doesn't add anything to stretch it out. It just seemed like, just silly things like that about adaptations always make me crazy, but it does.
Like In the Heights.
Right? Oh my God. You want to hear me complain about that? There's a frame to frame episode for you.
There is. So there's, I guess, the dichotomy of, we always ask what makes a film great and what makes a film have shortcomings. We're kind of in agreement that the film isn't great.
No.
But the material is.
Yes. The show is capital G great. No, no notes for sure. Well, no, I actually do have a couple notes, but
what are they?
Every time we've been kind of a peek behind the curtain, but we've been texting each other back and forth lyrics from the title song in our Movieversaries group chat for about a week now. Every time the ensemble sings rent, 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 I'm like, oh. if the show had opened off Broadway, become a hit, and been transferred to Broadway, I guarantee you something else would have been there. But this poor man passed away and didn't have time to change it. And then by that time, it was already lightning in a bottle and they weren't changing any of the words in this show. Yes. That's a lyric that I'm always like, oh, that was a placeholder that just never got replaced with anything. There's very, very tiny notes. I will also always remember the New York Times review from when this show opened, when Rent opened off Broadway. And the reviewer had a particular issue with referencing Musetta's Waltz so many times. And which is a motif from La Boheme, which is the inspiration for the show. And how Your Eyes ends with that same riff from Musetta's Waltz. And the line in the review was, we can only imagine what this could have been if we hadn't lost him so early. Which is both the tragedy of it, but the beauty of it. Because as I said before, before I almost started crying within the first 5 minutes of this episode, that this is a piece of work about living each day as if you're last, written by a man who reached his last day before he saw his dream come true.
Yeah.
So the shortcomings are very, very, very much nitpicks in the work itself.
Yes. I mean, the lineage between, I'm, as you well know, Violet, I'm a massive Hamilton head, and the lineage between the two, with the notion of Hamilton being so focused on his legacy and the the very eloquent way that Lin-Manuel Miranda puts it in the show, of planting seeds in a garden that you never get to see.
Correct.
And luckily, in Jonathan Larson's case, that garden is utterly beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, it sucks that he didn't get to see that garden. And think of what we could have had. Think of the work that we could have had.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than curse the darkness, turn on a light, right? We did get this.
Mm-hmm.
And it spoke so clearly to him about who he was, because he was running out of time. There must have been some sort of thing in the back of his head that said, there's an urgency to this and we mm-hmm. need to get this out and ready. And
yeah,
and the fact that we had what we did get
mm-hmm.
is, I mean, we've got this, his name lives 30 years later as a result of it.
Yeah.
So we can always appreciate the work that he did leave behind.
Mm.
Do you have a favorite fact about the film? Or a behind-the-scenes story or something along those lines?
I mean, it's not a favorite. It's stuff I don't like. But this is what I was... this is, like, behind-the-scenes stuff from when I was doing my research this morning. There's a lot of things that I feel would have given the movie more bite or made it feel more immediate in the way that you and I are sitting here and talking about how much we miss, that Chris Columbus decided not to put in the movie because he thought it would be too much or too difficult. Or this is a show that is difficult.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be.
You should feel a little uncomfortable. Like in the show, they talk about what happened to Roger's ex-girlfriend. And how mm-hmm. she took her own life when she got her diagnosis. And that's how Roger knows that he's HIV positive. And it happens in one line sung by Mark.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. But Chris Columbus filmed all those weird flashbacks. Yeah. And then filmed April in the bathtub and then decided, it looks, it was too rough. It looked too hard. So I took it out and I was like, okay, well, number one, you didn't even really have to put it in. You could have just had Mark sing the one line he sings on stage and we would have gotten mm-hmm. the whole story and been fine. And number two, who are you to say it's too hard or too much or the audience can't take it? Like at this point, people had been seeing this for almost a decade.
He's the director of the first two Harry Potter movies. Do you know, like, but the point is, like, he'd come off, that those were the two movies he'd directed before this, and they were family friendly, and Rent shouldn't be.
No.
Rent should not be family friendly.
Nope.
I was surprised to see that it's rated a 12 for in the UK. I think that I wouldn't take children to see this younger than 15.
You shouldn't. People do.
Well, I'm sure. But I think that it, as a subject matter, it's so dark, and the beauty of the show is how light it makes the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't have that light without that darkness.
Totally.
And yeah. I think that could possibly be a why he felt that didn't fit the vision that he had for the film
mm-hmm.
because he was coming off of children's films.
He was. Yeah. Yeah. Seeing that made me crazy.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think that the fact that the film, when I finished watching it, I left it on because you had instrumentals of the songs
mm-hmm.
and I just enjoyed listening to that. And then at the end it flashed up, thank you, Jonathan Larson.
Yeah.
Which I'd not seen because, again, I've only seen the film once before.
Mm-hmm.
And that filled my heart with joy.
Yeah.
That made me happy.
Yeah.
We always ask for an MVP.
Mm.
I think we're going to be in some sort of agreement.
I'm sure
who is your MVP, Violet?
Jonathan Larson.
Yeah.
Come on.
Correct.
Please.
There was me trying to build it up as some sort of great mystery, but no, it's Jonathan Larson.
No, it's Jonathan Larson. They took his work, they put it on screen. It is, the problems with this movie are not with Jonathan Larson's work. Let's put it that way.
No, absolutely. I am 100% with you. But I am going to shout out Rosario Dawson in the cast.
Yeah. And Tracy Toms. She's great too.
And Tracy Toms, yes. Yeah. Because you are, as we know, part Joanne and part Maureen.
That's true. Got to have some Joanne representation.
Absolutely. So, Violet, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Best place is my link tree. It's linktr.ee/violet.h.310. And on there, you'll find links to this podcast, Movieversaries, and also the other podcast I co-host, Three Circles with Jeff Owen, a Disney podcast, and everywhere else I have guested.
Mm-hmm. And I can be found on a weekly basis on Frame to Frame. As this has dropped, we have just come out of the 3-episode Halloween stint, ready for episode 236, which, if you know how numbers work, Violet, means that the next episode after that will be 237. There's a hint.
Oh, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much to Violet and to everyone who has tuned in. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have, please subscribe to Movieversaries and give us a rating and a review wherever you can. While you're there, you should check the show notes. You'll find links to all of our things that we've been doing, as well as a link to the Discord where you can come and have a chat with us. Thanks again for your company, and we'll see you for the next installment of Movieversaries.